This week, the July 4th holiday, Independence Day, is upon us. A holiday who has its roots and foundations in the ideas of freedom, liberty, and more. We'll explore what writer and philosopher Thomas Paine had to say about American independence. We'll then explore what Freemasonry has to do in the course of its ritual work with the idea of freedom. We'll talk about the reason for the War of Independence, what we actually get wrong about the American Revolution. Was it about taxes or representation? You'll need to listen to find out. Perhaps it's even deeper. We'll then go into a short review of a text by Rudolf Steiner on the philosophy of freedom before wrapping it up with a few rousing quotes from Thomas Paine. All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode number 552. I want to thank the supporters of the WCY podcast, our contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners, whether you're coming to us through Patreon or PayPal. I want to thank you all for your assistance in bringing this Masonic podcast to the world for anybody who is interested in the royal science. I also would like to thank anybody who has made one-time gift contributions to the show as well, and everyone out there who shares the podcast across their social media channels or with their lodges or what have you. All is appreciated. In the news, I just wanted to mention that I did launch a new product on the store to help support the show. It is a handmade bespoke leather keychain. Now, I know these words get thrown around quite a bit, but what if I told you I'm the one who does it, right? So it's a full grain leather, hand cut, hand punched, hand sewn. I use an indestructible saddle stitching, hand burnished with Tokanol gum, and I put a little handy ring on there for whatever you want to put it on. It's all made by yours truly. You can hang it from your backpack, your brief, or you can use it as an actual keychain. One side features a simple square and compasses. The other side can feature your lodge seal or your initials or pretty much whatever you want. It's laser engraved by me also. Then it's gently cleaned of excess carbon from the burning process, and then it's brushed to a gently worn aesthetic. Free initials on the reverse side. Lodge seals can be done as well. Let me know for details. They are only $15. It's a steal for what it is. Again, all handmade, hand cut, everything. I do them. It takes a significant amount of time to put them together, but I'm doing it as a service to try to also raise some funds for the podcast, for the future endeavors. And as always, your patronage is appreciated. So if you want something cool, check that out. I also want to thank all of the people who have been following on TikTok, the Wizard of Arj. We go through the behind the scenes of the podcast as well as different tarot deck reviews and things. So if that is interesting to you, go to TikTok and you can follow me there. I will say that some of the videos, some of them, I will also put on Instagram and also go to Facebook. But for the majority of them, the best place to get it is on TikTok. Speaking of TikTok, I did put out a video recently where I want to do this giveaway, and I'm hoping you guys will get on this. I want to give away the Southern California Research Lodge Fraternal Review 2021 annual issue. In this issue, it is all of the issues that came out in full color. It is a beautiful edition, and it costs like $55 if you order it. I want to give you a shrink-wrapped copy, and all you have to do is go on TikTok, find that video, I'll pin it, and stitch it and let me know your favorite article ever from the Fraternal Review that you read. That's all you got to do. The best reply wins. I will ship it to you totally free, and I will take care of all of the costs to get it to you. I will say I will do this only for U.S. residents only. Otherwise, the shipping is a little crazy. However, please do that and so we can get this awesome edition out to you. If you want to purchase this, you can do so. It was available just a few days ago, and it's at an introductory price right now, but it's going to jump up to $55. So you want to check that out, as well as tickets to the South Pasadena MasonicCon event, which is happening at the end of July. It's going to be right around the corner. Tickets are available now, and it's going to sell out.
amazing speakers all around. And of course, Kansas MasonicCon is also at the end of August. It's busy MasonicCon season, so head on over to those websites to get your tickets and check it out. Links to everything will be in the show notes. This podcast is being released on July 3rd, 2022, and as such, it is right there next to the 4th of July, the Independence Day holiday here in the United States of America. So to call this episode a special edition or a special episode may be for those of us here in the United States or abroad who are United States citizens. Now, the podcast itself, this week I wanted to focus on not so much the idea of the War of Independence, the surface level history, but rather the philosophy behind the ideas of freedom, and perhaps pull the thread a little bit on exactly what the motivation behind the War of Independence had been, and also to objectively speak about the ideas of freedom. So we've got a number of things, as you heard in the top of the program, that we'll explore in order to go through this. But first and foremost, I'd like to read something from the American Yop Reader, and it's called Thomas Paine Calls for American Independence, 1776. Britons had long understood themselves as the freest people on earth, blessed with a limited monarchy and an enlightened parliament. Paine's pamphlet offered a very different portrayal of the British government. His criticism swept across the North American continent and generated widespread support for American independence. Perhaps the sentiments contained in the following pages are not yet sufficiently fashionable to procure them general favor. A long habit of not thinking a thing wrong gives it a superficial appearance of being right, and raises at first a formidable outcry in defense of custom. But the tumult soon subsides. Time makes more converts than reason. As a long and violent abuse of power is generally the means of calling the right of it in question, and in matters too, which might never have thought of had not the sufferers been aggravated into the inquiry, and as the King of England hath undertaken in his own right to support the Parliament in what he calls theirs, and as the good people of this country are grievously opposed by the combination, they have an undoubted privilege to inquire into the pretensions of both, and equally to reject the usurpation of either. In the following sheets, the author hath studiously avoided everything which is personal among ourselves. Compliments, as well as censure to individuals, make no part thereof. The wise and the worthy need not the triumph of a pamphlet. And those who are sentiment and judicious or unfriendly will cease of themselves, unless too much pains are bestowed upon their conversion. The cause of America is, in a great measure, the cause of all mankind. Many circumstances hath and will arise, which are not local, but universal, and through which the principles of all lovers of mankind are affected, and in the event of which their affections are interested. The laying of a country desolate with fire and sword, declaring war against the natural rights of all mankind, and extirpating the defenders thereof from the face of the earth, is the concern of every man to whom nature hath given the power of feeling, of which class, regardless of party censure, is the author. Society in every state is a blessing, but government, even in its best state, is but a necessary evil. Mankind being originally equals in the order of creation, the equality could only be destroyed by some subsequent circumstance. The distinctions of rich and poor may in a great measure be accounted for, and in that, without having recourse to the harsh, ill-sounding names of oppression and avarice. Oppression is often the consequence, but seldom or never the means of riches. And though avarice will preserve a man from being necessitously poor, it generally makes him too timorous to be wealthy. But there is another and great distinction for which no truly natural or religious reason can be assigned, and that is the distinction of men into the kings and subjects. Male and female are the distinctions of nature, good and bad the distinctions of heaven. But how a race of men came into the world, so exalted above the rest, and distinguished like some new species, is worth inquiring into, and whether they are the means of happiness or of misery to mankind.
In the early ages of the world, according to the scripture chronology, there were no kings, the consequence of which was there were no wars. It is the pride of kings which throws mankind into confusion. Holland, without a king, hath enjoyed more peace for the last century than any of the monarchical governments of Europe. Antiquity favors the same remark, but the quiet and rural lives of the first patriarchs have a snappy something in them, which vanishes when we come to the history of Jewish royalty. Government by kings was first introduced into the world by the heathens, from whom the children of Israel copied the custom. It was the most prosperous invention the devil ever set on the foot for the promotion of idolatry. The heathens paid divine honors to their deceased kings, and the Christian world hath improved on the plan by doing the same to their living ones. How impious is the title of sacred majesty applied to a worm who in the midst of his splendor is crumbling into dust. To the evil of monarchy, we have added that of hereditary succession, and as the first in a degradation and lessening of ourselves, so the second claimed as a matter of right is an insult and imposition on posterity. For all men being originally equals, no one by birth could have a right to set up his own family in perpetual preference to all others forever. And though himself might deserve some decent degree of honors of his contemporaries, yet his descendants might be far too unworthy to inherit them. One of the strongest natural proofs of the folly of the hereditary right in kings is that nature disapproves it. Otherwise, she would not so frequently turn it into ridicule by giving mankind an ass for a lion. O ye that love mankind, ye that dare oppose, not only the tyranny, but the tyrant, stand forth. Every spot of the old world is overrun with oppression. Freedom hath been hunted round the globe. Asia and Africa have long expelled her. Europe regards her like a stranger, and England hath given her warning to depart. Oh, receive the fugitive, and prepare in time an asylum for mankind. Thomas Paine, Common Sense. So here you have this excerpt from the book Common Sense by Thomas Paine, which is an outstanding text. Now, there is two parts of this that I decided to read, and rather than not address them, I wanted to address them. There may have been two eyebrow-raising parts of this that you may have thought interesting, or perhaps you thought, yikes. To the strangers of Thomas Paine, you may have thought that there was an air of anti-religious sentiment here, and there is. Those who might point out his speaking first of the Jewish royalty, and then a government of kings first set up from the children of Israel. I don't want this to be confused or to be taken, as some might think initially, as anti-Semitic. In fact, what Thomas Paine is doing is laying out in his own way, in his time, a timeline that speaks to the world in which his readers lived. And so for them, it was a Christian Europe. Christianity as a religion necessarily comes from Jesus of Nazareth and is included in the Holy Bible, which has ties to the Old Testament and the Pentateuch and Judaism. And so, when he speaks to the history of Jewish royalty, and what he's talking about there is actually paying the temple or money changing at the temple, having an intermediary between man and God, or man in his freedom that God has given him, is observed in his Christian world that he lives in, first in the world of Jewish antiquity. And then he says it is improved upon by the Christian nations of the world. And as for that, he's simply saying they took that same system and made it yet even more oppressive. And lastly, he says one of the strongest natural proofs of the folly of hereditary right in kings is that nature disapproves it. Otherwise, she would not so frequently turn it into ridicule by giving mankind an ass for a lion. Now, he's making a play on words here, but what he is speaking to is hereditary disorders that happen within inbreeding, and a lion is supposed to be the king, right? So instead, you have somebody with nature has said, this is wrong. And this is, you know, his argument against, the natural argument against a succession of kings through hereditary means. But this pamphlet, this piece, was so powerful in speaking to the anti-establishment of kings in the United States, what would become the United States. It was the thoughts of the many put into an eloquent
and easily understandable argument. They thought, here, finally, someone says what we have been thinking, and it gets spread around. So I hope you found this particular piece from Thomas Paine enlightening into the situation in which our early colonial Americans were dealing with. Before we get into the next piece, I wanted to ask our Craftsman Plus if they have read Thomas Paine, if they enjoy Thomas Paine as much as I do. What is your favorite text of Thomas Paine, or is there a favorite quote from Thomas Paine that is your go-to? Next up is an article that comes from Fairfax Masonic Lodge, number 556.com. It is a reprint of an article that was supposed to be available on, I think, Julian Reese's website, but the link is broken. So I'll place a link back to this particular lodge's website, but it's a quick, just two paragraphs on freedom and Freemasonry. Freedom is regarded in our century as a precious and absolute right. That is, as it should be. And in our earlier century, the American Declaration of Independence tells us how freedom was prized then. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The founding fathers of the American Republic certainly understood that liberty, freedom in an individual and in a social sense, was vital and essential. Those who have freed themselves from political, religious, or military oppression have an appreciation of the value of freedom that we, living our comfortable middle-class existence in the 21st century, may never be able to grasp. So let us try to examine what freedom means in a Masonic context. Whenever and wherever freedom is mentioned, there it has an immediate connoissance with Freemasonry. In what dimension do we speak of Freemasonry and freedom in the same breath? Which aspects of freedom are most immediately identifiable with the pursuit of self-knowledge and moral improvement? In the process of gaining inner light, what role does freedom play? Are you a free man? And of the full age of 18 years? This was the first question we were asked on being admitted into the temple for initiation. At first sight, this question seems incongruous. After all, we had just given up freedom. We had just been blindfolded, and we were unable to steer our course properly. We were led here and there with no means of exercising our own freedom to determine our course. But when we answered, "I am," we did so in the knowledge that we were exercising the ultimate freedom, the freedom to say, "I place myself unconditionally in the hands of the divinity." That presence of God that I understand to underpin all Masonic pursuits, I entrust myself not to a dogma or a creed, but to the purest divine beneficence. What a sense of freedom that can give us. The pursuit of moral improvement requires that, in a Masonic context, we make ourselves free of any social career or ideological baggage we might have been carrying around. As such, we would impede our progress. The real question posed by the first degree is, to what extent I will allow myself to be shaped by my own selfish impulses, and to what extent shaped by the new life offered through Freemasonry. When I am able to say my impulse is to go this way, but I am being asked to give up selfish impulses so I will go that way instead, then that offers a real freedom, a freedom from selfish indulgence. I liked this quick little piece here. I think, again, it's by Julian Reese. It has a link back to his website, which the link is broken, so I'm not sure if he's since taken this down or he didn't like the article or whatever, but it lives on here at this website. I'll put a link back. I think perhaps for a lot of us, this touches on what we would consider a surface level idea of freedom, and then he's kind of pulling us down into the gray a little bit. Which I really appreciate, because for a lot of folks, we're unable to take that next leap into an area of discussion of freedom and really what that means, because we don't have a formal foundation in philosophy. We don't know how to philosophize, even though you do it every day. You might not consider yourself into philosophy, but you know, when you're around the dinner table and you're discussing world events and what people have done and why you might think that might be wrong, or when you're arguing with somebody, or having a great quote-unquote argument with a brother while you're tooling over a car in the garage with a couple of beers, this is philosophizing. But the only difference here is that they're taking it to a next level and examining not the generalized it's right or wrong, but if you go a little bit deeper and you discover why something might be right or wrong, you take it back to Thomas Paine in his call for American independence. What do I mean by that? And that is contained within just the first two sentences. I want you to think about sentiment. So what you are going to say. And when you say it, it might not be fashionable to say it. And that when we don't always think critically about an action, that it could be wrong, it gives us an erroneous assumption that the action is either correct, right, or doesn't matter. And then when we attack it, that is, to course correct, there is public outcry in defense of a custom. So what Thomas Paine says again is, perhaps the sentiments contained in the following pages are not yet sufficiently fashionable to procure them general favor. A long habit of not thinking a thing wrong gives it a superficial appearance of being right, and raises the first formidable outcry in defense of custom. But continuing on, he says, the tumult, or the rioting, whatever you have, soon subsides, and time makes more converts than reason. Now, after that bit of philosophy, I'd like to read a short article that comes from us from PBS NewsHour. This was published back in 2016, December 26th, if you want. And I like these objective views of history without the political painting of, you know, patriotism or nationalism on top of the holiday. This piece is called What We Get Wrong About Taxes and the American Revolution. Why am I talking about the American Revolution? Well, that's Independence Day, right? It's the Declaration of Independence. This is the American Revolution. So, let's check this out. What We Get Wrong About Taxes and the American Revolution. No taxation without representation. The rallying cry of the American Revolution gives the impression that taxation was the principal irritant between Britain and the American colonies. But in fact, taxes at the colonies were much lower than taxes in Britain. The central grievance of the colonists was their lack of a voice in the government that ruled them. The political underpinnings of the American Revolution have been discussed and debated for more than 200 years, and there are multiple explanations of the causes and multiple analysis of the revolutionary dynamic. One question about the revolution that has remained difficult to answer is if a little representation in Parliament could have prevented a war for independence. Why did King George III not grant it? The question is the motivation for Sebastian Galliani and Gustavo Torin's study, Why Not Taxation and Representation? A Note on the American Revolution. In drawing attention to the role of representation as a spark for revolution, they note that the average British citizen who resided in Britain paid 26 shillings per year in taxes, compared to only 1 shilling per year in New England, even though the living standard of the colonists was arguably higher than that of the British. Most accounts of the events that led to the American Revolution depict a conflict between the colonies and a unified British government. In fact, the researchers argue the reality was subtler. They draw on a variety of historical accounts to describe the tension between two rival British interest groups, the landed gentry and the democratically inclined opposition, and explain the failure to reach a compromise that would have granted representation to the colonies. In particular, they focus on how extending representation would have affected the relative influence of these two groups. The researchers consider events a century before the American Revolution to have set the stage for a domestic tension in Britain at the time of the colonial protests. In 1649, during the English Civil War, a rebellion of parliamentarians overthrew and beheaded King Charles I. Oliver Cromwell, who ruled for most of the subsequent decade, supported expanding representation in government beyond landowners, and his government was sympathetic to grievances like those raised by the American colonies many decades later. However, following Cromwell's death in 1658, royalists returned to power and sought to restore the historical ruling class. When the colonies asked for representation in the middle of the 18th century, the monarchy was still recovering from its dethroning, and the landed gentry, now returned to primary power, still felt vulnerable. The researchers point out that the royalists were contending with factions that sought to bring democracy to Britain. While these opposition groups did not hold significant power, if representatives from the American colonies were invited to join Parliament, they likely would have sympathized with the oppression and expanded their influence. The researchers see this tension as critical to understanding why Britain was so reluctant to enfranchise the colonists. There were proposals to settle the colonial crisis peacefully, most notably by Thomas Pownall and Adam Smith. Smith, for example, proposed a quote-unquote system in which the political representation of Great Britain and America would be proportional to the contribution that each polity was making to the public treasury of the empire, end quote. Such proposals were rejected by the ruling coalition in Britain. Quote, the landed gentry who controlled the incumbent government feared that making concessions to the American colonies would intensify the pressure for democratic reforms, thus jeopardizing their economic and political position, end quote, the researchers find. Ultimately, the opposition of the landed gentry to the demands for representation by the American colonies pushed the colonies to rebellion and independence, but helped to delay the development of the incipient democratic movement in Britain. Jen Diedrich, National Bureau of Economic Research, for PBS NewsHour. So I love this piece because it gives you a much deeper understanding of why. So number one, this is never about taxes. It was about representation. The focus on taxation and the cute memes and things that people in, you know, political parties make, whether Democratic, Republican, Libertarian, Green, whatever, taxes are not the issue and never were. Taxes were very low compared to Great Britain. The issue was that of representation. And Britain didn't want representation because we were a kind of democracy of a sort. And had we been brought to Parliament, we would spread the disease of democracy across Britain before the monarchy was ready for it. Thus, it was not in the best interest to allow this to happen. And so, a revolution happened instead, and here we are. I'll put a link back to this PBS article in the show notes. And before we move on to a quick overview of a philosophical text I find very interesting, I wanted to point out something and likely not understood by most people out there today. And this is the 4th of July in the wild political climate that we live in today. There is a lot of talk about the quote-unquote evils of America and why perhaps we shouldn't celebrate the 4th of July here in the United States. Whether you agree with this or not, it's interesting and probably in our best interest to understand why. And really, for the best reasons why, for a marginalized society, I think perhaps one of the best resources to understand these arguments, if not to be coerced by them, but for your own edification and to know where people are coming from, is to read a famous speech given by Frederick Douglass. It was an oration that he gave on July 5th in 1852 at Corinthian Hall in Rochester, New York, at a meeting that was organized by the Rochester Ladies Anti-Slavery Society. Now, the speech is perhaps most widely known of all the Frederick Douglass writings, aside from his autobiographies. And in this pamphlet, Frederick Douglass talks about the great men that formed the country. And as a foundational document, it called for the equality of all men. And then he talks about the hypocrisy of many of those men because of the issue of slavery in the United States, that the Declaration of Independence was being trampled upon by the very existence of slavery in the United States. And so this is a very powerful speech. I will have a link back to the entire oration for you to dig into on your own time. And I do hope you take advantage and read it, because it's not necessarily something that many people know about, but it is certainly one of Frederick Douglass's greatest achievements and one of his best orations and well known. This speech in general is usually taught in history classes and in some high schools and colleges, but really the parts of the speech that were printed for high school and even colleges are abridged, and they misrepresent Douglass's original thoughts by omitting parts of it and then spinning things through editorial focusing. So check out his original speech, the oration, the 1852 pamphlet, and if you're looking for it and you just want to Google it and you're not looking for a link, the name that has been given to the oration in recent years is not what he titled it, but it's called What to the Slave is the Fourth of July. And this is relevant to Freemasonry because of our dedication to the equality of men and justice and the level. So I hope you take advantage of the link and check it out. The next thing I want to get into is a text that was called The Philosophy of Freedom. All I want to do here is read bits and pieces from the Wikipedia article on the text. I have gone through the source material from the Wikipedia article to ensure that what I'm going to be telling you is at least accurate in the objective sense of the word. Now, it's a rather lengthy discussion on this particular text. The text, originally written in German, is by, of course, our esotericist friend Rudolf Steiner, who has written a number of really cool and interesting papers and books. In fact, in a series of episodes, we read the entirety of Max Heindel's Ancient and Modern Initiation. And Max Heindel has often been accused of even plagiarizing Rudolf Steiner. However, I think really what he did was he took the message that was in German and brought it to America. He never really profited from any of the teachings. He died virtually penniless. So what is this book, or this text, The Philosophy of Freedom? Well, according to our sources, it is a fundamental philosophical work of esotericist Rudolf Steiner, who was born in 1861, passed away in 1925. Now, the particular text addresses this question of whether and in what sense human beings can be said to be free. The published paper originally came out in 1894, and a second edition came out in 1918, and the work has had a few different English titles, including The Philosophy of Spiritual Activity, The Philosophy of Freedom, and Intuitive Thinking as a Spiritual Path. Now, it's divided into a couple of parts. Part one is The Philosophy of Freedom examines the basis of freedom in human thinking, and it gives an account of the relationship between knowledge and perception and explores the role in the appearance of knowledge. So when we think about this, I want you guys to think freedom in thinking, and he says he gives the account of the relationship between knowledge and perception. So this is alluding to our perceived freedom versus what is truly freedom. It explores the role, again, in the appearance of knowledge. Part two, he analyzes the conditions necessary for human beings to be free. And he develops a moral philosophy that he labels ethical individualism. And the book's subtitle, Some Results of Introspective Observation Following the Methods of Natural Science, indicates the philosophical approach Steiner intends to take. And that is, of course, through the world of natural sciences. In the text, he goes through what we call the knowledge of freedom, where he explores the human freedoms by accepting, quote-unquote, that an action of which the agent does not know why he performs it cannot be free. And this is really interesting, because if you do something and you don't know why you do it, are you truly free? The book then goes on through several other chapters, and eventually you get to the second part of the book, The Reality of Freedom. And Steiner begins the second part of the book by emphasizing the role of self-awareness in objective thinking. It says here he modifies the usual description of inner and outer experience by pointing out that our feelings, for example, are given to us as, namely, outer perceptions. Both of these, feelings and perceptions, tell about objects we are interested in, the one about ourselves, the other about the world. Both require the help of thinking to penetrate the reasons that they arise, to comprehend their inner message. With regard to freedom of the will, Steiner observes that a key question is how the will to action arises in the first place. Steiner describes to begin with two sources for human action. On the one hand, the driving forces springing from our natural being, from our instincts, feelings, and thoughts, insofar as these are determined by our character, and on the other hand, various kinds of external motives we may adopt, including the dictates of abstract ethical or moral codes, i.e. the social contract. In this way, both nature and culture bring forces to bear on our will and our soul life. So overcoming these two elements, neither of which is individualized, we can achieve genuinely individualized intuition that speaks to a particular situation at hand. By overcoming the slavish or automatic response to the dictates of both our lower drives and conventional moralities, again, that's like the social contract, and by orchestrating a meeting place of objective and subjective elements of experience, we find the freedom to choose how to think and act. Freedom for Steiner does not consist in acting out everything subjective within us, but in acting out of love, thoughtfully and creatively. In this way, we can love our own actions, which are unique and individual to us, rather than stemming from obedience to external moral codes or compulsive physical drives. Both of the latter constitute limitations on freedom. He then gives four concepts of freedom, which are love, the ideal part of my being and thinking, obedience to oneself, and non-objective self-determination. And then there is the shortest part of the book, which is only one chapter, The Consequence of Monism. It's 9 pages in the original German of the 1894 edition and 10 pages in Michael Wilson's 1964 English translation. It's been through some brief editorial changes. However, the text in itself is a really interesting and thought-provoking essay, essentially, in the form of a book about what true freedom is to the individual. And then, of course, once we master this, we can then affect things in our scope of influence, outside the point and to the edge of the circle, if you want to think about that Masonically. And then even further, perhaps, by you influencing others and the overlap of circles, you then expand beyond the point within a circle in a way that is acceptable to the Masonic philosophy. For our Craftsman Plus, let us know what freedom really is for you personally, for your community, and for the world at large. I want to thank the producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners of the WZY podcast. If you want to learn more about how you can help support this show, head on over to WZYpodcast.com and click on Support the Show. We have it in our power to begin the world all over again. Freedom with sacrifice. Those who expect to reap the benefits of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigues of supporting it. Heaven knows how to put a proper price on its goods. And it would be strange indeed if so celestial an article as freedom should not be highly rated. Lay your shoulders to the wheel. Let it be told to the future world that in depth of winter, when nothing but hope and virtue could survive, that the city and the country, alarmed at one common danger, came forth to meet and repel it. I love the man that can smile in trouble, that can gather strength from distress, and grow brave by reflection. 'Tis the business of little minds to shrink, but he, whose heart is firm, and whose conscience approves his conduct, will pursue his principles unto death. These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country, but he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered, yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. What we obtain too cheaply, we esteem too lightly. It is dearness only that gives everything its value. The American Crisis. Thomas Paine. I hope you all have a meaningful 4th of July celebration. We'll talk to you all next week. Until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
WCY Media.
That's it. Here's your